of friendship, of communion, that is exclusive to the marriage relationship. And it's important for the leader to have in order, because there is a strength and a security in that relationship, which is why there's no secrets in that relationship, which is why there's total confidence. I put down the word confidence. There is a confidence in the marriage relationship. You share with your wife things you don't share with anybody else, innermost thoughts and desires, and the same the other way around. If you don't, you've got a problem. We don't communicate those things. So there's a whole area of confidence. There's a sharing of our lives that takes place in marriage, or ought to be working out in our oneness, or out of our oneness, that is beyond anything else. And those are the issues that I'm looking for in that heading. Anybody else got anything in there that's not been mentioned? I've been rattling on about it. We're talking about the ideal, of course. We're working towards this, folks. So don't say, oh, well, my marriage is a total failure then, because. Say, hey, this is what we're looking towards. This is what we're working for.
Complete honesty, I think you said about transparency.
Yeah.
That's the one person.
Yes, that's got to be there. Mm-hmm. That's got to be there. That's why I've had guys come up to me and say, listen, I've messed up, you know, I've had a relationship with another woman and whatever, you know, if I tell my wife it will destroy her and whatever. I say, listen mate, you've got no choice, you've broken trust, you have got to, because that will be a barrier in your relationship. And I've had to work through a number of those issues, but to leave those things hidden is a disaster for a because it's the oneness issue, the coming together. If you leave anything that, like that, men or women, if those things aren't covered, man, they're going to trap you at some time. And you've got to face them and deal with them, because this relationship is so special. It demands that kind of oneness. So, what a challenge. Okay, what about listing ways? Can we move on? Yeah, listing ways in which you can show your wife you cherish and delight in her. Let's go for Mike on this, yeah. And then we'll go for Anne and see if they agree. Well, this is about understanding your wife, you see. Sometimes we don't know what our wives want. I mean, it's been staggering me to discover what my wife really wants me to do and what she's not worried about, which are totally different from the things that I would do, you know. Okay, Mike?
First of all, communication and say-so and listen.
Right, to listen. Okay. Right.
Buy flowers and gifts.
Buy gifts. All right. Good. Pardon? Yeah. That will be interesting. that will be interesting to get a reaction from Anne on that in a moment. Yeah. Because that's how we think. You see, that's the value of men. But as I understand it, and I'm preempting now, women don't care whether it costs 50 pence or 5 quid. It's just the gift. It's not the amount. Whereas men think, oh, well, I won't do it because it's only 50p. I'll wait and I'll buy a gift like 6 months later that costs 50 quid. Actually, she'd rather have 100 gifts at 50p. That's... Anyway, go on.
Encourage and praise her.
Absolutely, yeah. Good. Come on then, Anne. What are you looking for? How could...
Listening,
good. Okay, right.
Surprising, for example, flowers or treats, but like you say, just a little anything.
Yeah, it's not the amount, is it? It's not the price, it's the gift, yeah.
Commending me to others, physical sensitivity and helping out when under pressure.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. All right, what has anybody else got in there that's not been mentioned?
I've got showing a real desire to want to be with me. And
right.
You know, very overly ever do that, but you don't as you go into marriage, because
you're so busy.
Other things happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, your relationship is being the least.
Mm. Yes, okay. Yeah, and understanding that is very interesting. The things that bless my wife are things that I would never bless me either. There's a difference between a man and a woman. I was talking to somebody this week who's actually a single missionary, and she was talking about how difficult it is to work in a man's world. She's in India, and how difficult it is to work amongst male missionaries because of a totally different understanding and different points of view, different understanding. So she says, when we get together with, you know, to talk about policy and talk about missions, she says, I want to talk about me and how I feel and what I'm going through and my situation. She said, but all the men want to talk about plans and programs and what they're going to do and how they're going to resolve this. She said, they're not the slightest bit interested in how I feel. They want to know what we're doing and what we're going for. So she says, I get incredibly frustrated by that. And I think that's true in husbands and wives too. Wives want to say, this is how I feel. Whereas the man wants to work it all out and say, what we're going to do tomorrow, plan tomorrow. And the wife says, actually, what I want to do is talk about how I feel and whatever. And I think that communication thing, that's understanding your wife, understanding the difference between a man and a woman. You see, my wife really loves me going shopping with her, supermarket shopping, once a month. But I've discovered all she wants is me to be there and push the trolley. She doesn't want me to say a word. For some reason, she really enjoys me being there. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to make any comment. I don't have to help her out on what to buy. In fact, when I do, I usually get in trouble because I go for the cheapest and whatever, and then I'm instructed that actually the cheapest actually costs you more, because if you buy the cheapest toilet rolls, you need three to make one of these and whatever. So I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'd be better to shut up and whatever. And I've discovered that there is just something, and that's an hour a week. It's not the amount of time, it's quality time. An hour a month, rather. It's just for the month. It's not for the weekly shopping, but the monthly shopping. She just loves me to be there, to push the trolley, just to be there at the checkout and just put the bags into the car. She doesn't want me to talk. And actually, I've learned to use the time. I meditate and I pray. I mean, she doesn't want to talk to me. She doesn't care the fact that I don't talk or communicate. It's not there for that. For some reason, there's something that she really appreciates about that. And an hour a month is no great shakes to do something that actually I don't enjoy it in the slightest. But there's those kind of things. And we as men need to understand that there are needs, emotional needs, there are needs in a woman, in our wives, that we don't necessarily relate to in terms of understanding, but by in understanding her, we can actually give her worth and value by doing those things, because she'll appreciate it. Now, that you as a woman might not want that or need that or appreciate that, but I think we need to understand those things. All right, anything else in that area? Okay, let's move on to protecting her then. How do you protect her? Let's find out what a woman's looking for. Barbara, we haven't used you, have we?
No.
Oh. You're a slow worker. All right, well, can you think of something then? What would come under that heading? How would you want to be protected? How would you want Bill to protect you? While you're thinking.
Just supporting right values, I think, that sort of thing. Protect me through...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you want to be... How do you want to be protected, you know? What do you want... What are you looking for there? Julie, what have you got?
We've got the typical setup of, say, wife at home looking after children and husband working. Then husband needs to be responsible financially, so that
right.
They don't worry about bills and stuff like
that. Yeah, and I think even if it's the other way around, the husband still needs to take responsibility. I'm not actually someone who say, oh, no, it's wrong, you know, if the wife is incredibly qualified and whatever. But I think it's still his responsibility, even if he, you know, even if there's a what they call a role reversal thing. Even in that, it doesn't change the issue of responsibility. And so I think even in that, I think even in making that decision to do it, it's not an abdication of the man's responsibility. He's actually taking it on. So I think that's a protection issue, yeah. The whole providing and taking financial responsibility. Yeah. Where else?
Praying for his wife.
Praying for his wife. Yeah, I'd broaden that out a bit. I'd put that under the heading of bringing leadership to the family, both natural and spiritual, that we protect our wives by... In the first one, Anne said about, you know, the husband taking responsibility for decisions. That's what this is about. That's what leadership is about. At the end of the day, after you discuss and after you share together and hear the values, have the input of your wife, you then make a decision. And that's about bringing leadership to the family, but that's natural and spiritual. The leadership towards prayer and whatever should come from the husband. He should set the disciplines in the home, spiritual and natural. Yeah. Okay. How else could you protect your wife?
I want to be aware of where Barbara is with the Lord.
Okay.
Barbara's a house group leader in our church, you see.
Right.
My role there is very supportive.
Okay. No, that's good.
So, often I'm just trying to find out, where she is at this moment.
Okay.
What she's trying to do.
That's good. That's good. Sounds reasonable. Okay. Again, understanding your wife is that you then understand the emotional makeup too. So you don't allow your wife to become overburdened. That's an issue of protection. That when you say, because what happens is a woman responds to needs emotionally, and so wants to get involved in everything. I've discovered that every vision and burden that's shared, my wife wants to sign up for. So I have to sit down and talk to her, and because that she responds emotionally. You know, it's the love, the mother heart, particularly when it's a social need or a care thing. She wants to be in everything. So you can't do it. So you don't allow her to be overburdened. That's actually a protection. You protect her from herself, from that which is natural to her and right in her, but you say, hey, no, look, the man with his logical, analytical way of thinking says, no, look, you're already out 7 nights a week in 7 different ministries. You can't do 8 because you haven't got the time to do it. So you don't allow yourself to be overburdened. And the other thing that I put down here of protection is that you don't overburden her with your problems either. You see, men just want to get it off their chest. Pardon? I think so. I think they want to pour it out and speak it out, and like they come home from a meeting, you see. Oh, that blooming meeting, that bloke leading the worship, he drove me nuts, that preaching was terrible, whatever, whatever, whatever. And he just gets it out and that's it. And then the wife, alright, it's okay, come back at me. Alright. And then the wife is left with that, and you put that on her. And because she responds emotionally and whatever, she carries it. You've got it off your chest and it's out and it's gone. And your wife carries it. Now, I know that's a generalisation, but I would say that normally that would be true of men and women.
No, yeah. Work at all, but my dad is the same.
Yeah.
He takes an awful lot to get him to be
right.
He's had a meeting like that, he
won't
think about it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he would hold it and carry it and whatever. Okay. Yeah, fine. I mean, we're different personalities. I would have said that generally that was more the male, like, expresses his views and his feelings and gets rid of it, but then he leaves, and I'm talking about in this context of then dumping it on his wife. I know that's a problem I have and I've had to work at, so I guess you talk about your own relationship. But once I've talked about it and got it all off my chest, it's gone, you know.
Well, my husband will come home if he's had a hard day or something. He'll have a good old no, and he feels much better. And then I'm left with, well, he's hit me with that.
Yeah.
Whereas when I went out to work, because I had a long journey from London,
yeah,
I tried to leave work behind in that journey.
Yeah.
And I would walk in with a, I'm home now. And I tried to understand it more now, but it still hits me when he has this moan, and then he feels a whole lot better.
Yeah, maybe that's just more of a personality thing than a particular trait of the male stroke female. I don't know, but I mean that would be how I would view things. Okay, so how else could you protect? What else are you looking for, ladies? Tell us, what are you looking for, so that we know, so that we can be.
Along the lines of what you've just been saying, protection is from ourselves. You know, to have a right picture of ourselves.
Right. Okay. Yes. So the whole thing of giving you value and worth is there in that kind of thing. Yeah, protecting you from a wrong view of yourself. Yeah. I'm still working on that one. Yeah, I mean, it's what I said yesterday about men and women. I think again, it's a generalisation. It's not true in every case, but like the sound judgment not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. Most men have a you know, an elevated view of their sense of their own importance, and most women have a problem of undervaluing and underselling and inadequacy kind of problem, and both of them are wrong, and we need to help one another with that and work on that. All right, how can you improve your relationship then with your wife? What steps can you take to improve, or what are you looking for, ladies, in your men that would improve your relationship?
Communication.
All right. Pardon? Right. How would you express that? Listening? Do you ladies feel that we men don't always listen or listen properly or don't really hear what you're saying because we have this block view and you're wanting to pour out how you feel, and all we want to do is make a decision about what we do, and what you're looking for is to be heard. Those kind of things. Is that the communication is not just a time issue, is it? In fact, the time issue is not the key issue. The key issue is the quality time. Is that right? Then we can improve in that area. Are you listening to this, Ralph?
Yeah. Gardening.
Gardening. What? Do the gardening.
No, doing it together.
Well, you can improve your relationship with your wife by doing doing things together. And if gardening's one of those things, yes.
Francis enjoys that, two of us out there in the garden.
Right. And so whether you enjoy it or not is not the issue. If you, yeah. No. It's the same thing as me going shopping, yeah.
To do something she likes, it's like, you walking around.
Yeah, the supermarket, yeah.
It's in the garden.
Yeah, that's good. So you're developing an interest in your wife, even in things that you don't particularly have an interest in, for her sake. Yeah, that's a struggle sometimes. All right. Yes. How else can you improve your relationship?
Pray together.
Yes. Pray together more. Well, I hope you do pray together. I mean, I'm staggered by the number of couples who do not pray together and the number of couples who have problems praying together. I find that horrific. Sorry if anybody struggles with that, but we've really got a breakthrough on that one. I mean, that's the starting point of developing your own relationship, that you actually are free together in the presence of God in terms of praying, and you should be freer praying with your husband stroke wife than you should with any other person. You should have a better quality of prayer life with your wife stroke husband than you do with anybody else, and if you haven't, it's something we need to give attention to and work on. Yeah. What other steps can we take to improve our relationship? Right, okay, the whole thing of unselfishness, absolutely right. Unselfishness, yeah, because we are basically selfish people, and that's the major cause of problems, that we don't love as Christ did, which was serving, and the consideration of what the other person needed, wanted, required. Okay. Now, I put down a couple of practical things that may or may not be relevant to you. Bring her into decision making. Special consideration during stress times. Understanding the monthly cycle, things of that nature, which are all going to improve the relationship of a husband with a wife. And those things, again, this whole thing of oneness, the development of oneness, and the understanding that marriage isn't just an opportunity now and a way of legalizing your sexual relationship. Understanding that the oneness that comes has implications far beyond that is really the issue. And all these things are related to that and the outworking of that. And I think we need a lot more teaching and preaching on it. To understand how that will work out in very practical ways within our lives. Okay, let's. Anybody want to contribute? Any hints, tips, helps, observations, things you've heard about this whole area? Because we're talking about being leaders, and this issue is a big one. Because actually, if our marriage goes wrong, then we're not in a position to exercise leadership in the church. If we don't get this right, then it's going to hamper us from being effective in any form of leadership. And I don't know, I don't think there's anybody in this gathering who's in that position, but the tragedy of a man whose wife is not walking with God, or a woman whose husband is not walking with God, the incredible pressure that brings to them in the outworking of their church life, except in very unusual cases, is a major problem to the development, growth, and leadership possibilities for those folks. So this is a major issue that we need to give attention to and keep working at. Yeah, and when you solve it, come and give me some hints and tips, because I'm still working on it and working at it and seeking to understand my wife, as I'm sure she's trying to understand me. Okay, leader is to be hospitable. This word means lover of strangers. It's essential we reach out to others, make them welcome, put them at ease. Leaders who aren't hospitable have a real problem, and I do know some. Leaders who are aloof, leaders who are unapproachable, leaders who you can't get to, that's all evidences of inhospitality, and their leadership is impaired because of that. And so we're looking to be those who are approachable, those who love others and who put people at ease and people feel comfortable with you and feel at home with you. That's what we're talking about, being hospitable. There's some scriptures there that you can look up. Romans 12:13, which talks about being hospitable in the fellowship, hospitable to all believers. Hebrews 13:1-2. And actually being even wider than that, hospitable with all mankind. Romans 13:8-9. So that actually it becomes an evangelistic opportunity, our hospitality, and we need, it's not just about giving people meals or putting them up overnight. This thing of being hospitable is an attitude that we need to embrace. And then thirdly, a leader must be able to manage his own house well. 1 Timothy 3:4-5, Titus 1:6. This is really important, because the issue that's in hand here is that if we do not manage our own lives, our own affairs, how can we attempt to manage others? If we do not bring up our children properly, if we don't discipline our children, if we don't lead our children, how can we lead somebody else's? It really is important. And I make some statements here. Number one, leaders are to discipline their children. And the whole thing of your children being an example, and I'm talking about young children now, children before they come to adulthood. Leaders are to discipline their children. Number two, leaders are to have a well-ordered family where children, and I'm talking about young children there, are committed to Jesus, where the wife is dedicated to her husband and children respect and love their parents. Number three, it's not speaking of perfect families, we're all going in grace. It doesn't mean that the children of leaders have got to be perfect kids. We're talking about families growing up with all the tensions and other things, but it is saying if we cannot lead our own families, we cannot lead anybody else's. And so this issue is a major one, and many of us are hampered from fulfilling a larger, bigger role in leadership because we've not brought leadership to our own children, and therefore we have no right to bring leadership to anybody else. So that is a really important issue. How can we then bring leadership to our children? Let's finish with this. Sorry I've rushed through that. You might have some questions on it. I don't want to stop any questions, but it is an important issue. How can we bring leadership to our children? How should we bring leadership to our children?
By example.
By example. That's excellent. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Involving them,
sort of
taking them involved in decisions to the level that they
right. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Absolutely right. Yeah. That is true. When our children reached a certain age, whenever we've moved, we've talked to them about it, and we've brought them into the decision-making process to honour and respect them. Yeah. I put respect them. We need to respect our children, not see them just as kids that we bring along. Yeah. Okay. How can we else can we bring leadership to our children?
Love them,
obviously. Yeah. Discipline them, that's right. Discipline lovingly and consistently. Yeah, absolutely important that our discipline is brought lovingly and consistently, because most of our discipline is brought inconsistently and from a wrong basis. Often it's because they make us angry. You know, I mean, you go to visit Granny Smith and they jump all over Granny Smith's armchairs and you give them a thump. But actually, you let the kids jump all over your armchairs at home. So it's not their fault they jump over Granny Smith's furniture, but you smack them for that because they've showed you up. That's a wrong discipline. That's not discipline. That's just they've upset you. And discipline is, you know, is not to do with the fact that your children have showed you up, which is why a lot of our discipline takes place, or because our kids make us angry. But our discipline should be for a totally different and consistent motive, which is to teach them and to train them, to bring them up aright. Okay? How else can we bring leadership to our children? We should encourage family worship. I've got that we should prophesy God's purpose for their lives over them. Just as you've got a purpose, so have the kids. Do you know, it was a revelation to me when I heard Pat Morgan speak for the first time. And she said, do you know why God has given you children? And he said, well. And she says, God has given you children for the sake of your nation. And your responsibility is to discover God's purpose for your child and teach and train and encourage that child into their purpose. Because God's purpose for them is that they will bless and impact and touch your nation. So, wow, what a thing. That you have actually got to discover your child's destiny and encourage them towards it. Now that has dangers that you can seek to, you know, force them in a certain line, but actually if you genuinely get God's purpose for your child, then you set about bringing that child to fulfill God's purpose for them. That's incredible responsibility, that God hasn't given you children just for the sake of protracting the propensity of your seed or your name, or just so that you can have grandchildren. He's given you children for the sake of your nation or the nations of the world. Wow. So you bring leadership to your children by praying for them, by prophesying over them, by counselling them. I hope that my children who are grown up now, when they want advice, would come to me first. Not because I demand that or they ought to do that, but because they have found and see something in me where they actually believe that I care about them, love them, and that they would want to hear from me about what they ought to do. Or what they might do. I would see that as a sign that I've done the job well. That they would actually come to me and still look for counsel. Yeah. Okay, that's ways in which we bring leadership to our children. And again, all of those things will then be reflected in the way we bring leadership in the church. So this business about managing your own household, it's not like, oh well, you've got a checklist, have I done this? It's actually essential, and the reason is that if you're not an example in your own home, and you're not working things out amongst your own children, then and you're not seeking to do that amongst your own children, then you ain't going to do it in the household of God. And so the same qualities that you're bringing to the leadership of your own family, then you want to bring to the household of God. Yeah.
It's our responsibility to teach and train our kids in the way that we want them to go. But as they get sort of older, especially sort of senior school age, they start developing their own ideas.
Right.
What do you do if you've got a child who really doesn't want to go to church?
Right, it depends what age they are.
Talking 11.
Yeah. Yeah, well at 11 I would still say that you have, you know, you can bring that firm discipline to them. There's lots of things they don't want to do, but they have to do. I would say there's an age and a point where you see, again, this word children is very interesting. And we have invented this stage called adolescence. I mean, I was really challenged by this when our children got to teenage years, and one of our children particularly really was really rebellious at the age of 16, you know, and we had real problems working through this. But, well, I don't know. You must decide this. The government says so. I mean, my daughter at 16 said to us, you can't tell me what to do. I can leave home and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's the law. That is true. She can. And so you reach a point where, you know, that's the situation. Now, please God that you have such a relationship with your kids that doesn't happen. With one of ours, that happened. Which was I went through an awful time with that over these biblical things and whatever. I had to work through them. But what I discovered in working through that was that what Paul is saying here in the Bible is a totally different cultural situation to us here. You realise that when Mary bore Jesus, she was about 13 and a half probably. Certainly no more than 14 and a half. So at 14, 13, she's married and she's having a baby, because there was no such thing as adolescence in that day. You went from childhood to adulthood. And so even now in the Jewish calendar, you have the bar mitzvah, which at 12 stroke 13, you become a man. There's no adolescence. And so when it talks about children, the word that's used for children there is talking about children below the age of 12 and 13, because you were no longer considered a child in the sense of not being a man. And when you were 13, you actually took responsibility at 13 for yourself. So Paul is talking about children below that age. So I would say to you, you need to interpret that biblically, that there is a point where, you know, but our society, you see, when I was 20, the thought of, you know, my father still had that, even if I didn't agree with him, at 20, I would never have left home. Because, like, you know, there was nowhere to go, there was no social services who would put you up or whatever. It was still seen as a terrible thing to do that, and the thought of living on the streets and whatever. But the kids of this generation, it's not a problem to at all. They just go round, down the road and live with their mates or whatever, or go down the social and get a flat and whatever. And it's a totally different concept. And so you can't impose one cultural view on another. You must come to a conclusion about that. But understanding that in Bible days and in the culture that Paul wrote these things, he was talking about an age of 12 stroke 13 when you became an adult and you were considered an adult. As a girl, you were married by the age of 15. If you weren't married, you were on the shelf. I mean, that's where it was. So that's the culture there for ladies, and for men, they were considered a man at 12 stroke 13 and given responsibility of being a man. And so when Paul says manage your own house well, he's talking about children under the age of 12, 13, that you manage them. Well, that's a whole different ball game to when they become 15, 16. You know, up to the age of 12, 13, you shout at the kids and they do as they're told. After that, they shout at you and you do as you're told. Well, not quite, but it's a whole different ball game. And we need to understand that. Now, we need to build a relationship with our children, and they need to have a respect and authority where they respond to us, you know. So my son's 20 and he's still in our house and under our care and still respects and honours us and whatever. Now, I'm delighted about that. I don't want him to leave. I'm not saying at 13 he should go and leave home. I want to build that relationship. But I believe that there is a point where a child comes to manhood or adulthood and they need to become responsible for their own decisions, and I think that the scripture's talking about managing your house before that, your children. The word children, there's five different Greek words for children. This is back to our Greek and Hebrew thing. Five different words. One which speaks of an infant babbling. No, one which speaks of a tiny baby. One which speaks of an infant up to the age of 2 or 3. One which speaks of a child till the age of 12. One which speaks of an adult. And one which speaks of a son who's come into their inheritance. And they're all translated either children or son in the Bible. But the one that Paul uses there is the word for a child before it is considered an adult, which is up to the age of 12 stroke 13. Okay, so the key thing is to teach and train them in those years so that when they reach 13, 14, they make decisions that are based on the values that you've put into their lives. And the other thing to say is that we have abdicated, we being parents, the responsibility that God has given us. You know who's responsible for the education of your child? Not the state. We are. That's where God puts it. God says to the children of Israel, you teach your children. So what do? We bung them off to state school and we have nothing to do with the kind of things they're taught in the classroom, and we might tut-tut about a few things, but we don't actually get serious about it, and we're abdicating our responsibility. That's not that we should all start teaching our children at home, but we need to take responsibility and not put it on the state. And
it's quite interesting, because if a child turns persistently, then those parents are still prosecuted.
Yeah.
Because
so,
they've got to be sending them to school.
Yeah. But I mean, the other side of that is that when you have a parents' evening and whatever, what percentage of parents do you get out, you know? What percentage of parents show an interest in the school? You know, I mean, I remember the sex education thing at your school, Headley Water, when I went to it, because they were going to have an evening when they told you about how they were going to do it. And I think it was for the first 3 years of the school, and there were about 60 of us there. And there's hundreds of kids, I don't know, 400 or 500 kids, actually, but only 60 parents turned up, you know. And this is like a major issue of life and whatever. And in the end, they were saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other. And I stood up and said, excuse me, I believe this is my responsibility. Will you please let us know when you're going to teach on these issues, what you're going to teach, and then we can make a decision about whether we want our children to be part of that or not. Or, alternatively, we can know that you've taught something, and we at home can readjust the teaching that you've brought if we do not agree with it. You know, and actually it was a groundswell of response to that. Because again, if you pull your kids out of classes, it makes them feel odd and whatever. But if you know that they're going to be taught that a homosexual lifestyle is an alternative lifestyle, then at home you want to be able to sit down with them saying it's not. And bring your values, because you're responsible, not the school. It's no good tutting at the school. It's our responsibility, the education of our children. And so the values that they're living by and whatever are not the responsibility of someone else, but us. So we need to bear that in mind. Okay, that's not that all the education system that we have is not, I'm not suggesting it's all rotten and whatever, but there are issues in our education system that do need some looking at, and some attitudes and values that we would not be happy with. Well, that's our responsibility to make sure that we redress those or address those issues. Okay. All right. So this is how you are going to fulfill the kind of leadership that God's calling you to. These are the qualities that God is looking for in those who are leaders in the house of God. So what do we do? Do we give up and say, like we just looked, who is sufficient for these things? Or do we say, God, come and help us. Come and help us in our marriages. Come and help us in our relationships. Come and help us, oh God, in the areas of weakness and limitation in our lives, so that we can become different, so that your Holy Spirit can come and do what he needs to do, so that we might be the kind of men and women who are going to make an impact in our day. And the effectiveness of our ministry is not so much dependent upon our gift and ability and personality. It's dependent upon the kind of people we are, which is why Paul says these are the issues that matter. So I trust by the grace of God that by this time next year you will be a better man, a better woman than you are today. That more of the disposition of Jesus and more of the characteristics of leadership that Paul outlines in 1 Timothy will be evident in your life, so that you and I pray that for me too, so that you and I might be more effective in our ministry and in our lives. God bless you, keep you, make his face to shine upon you. If you're having a summer holiday this year, be blessed and encouraged and inspired, rested. If you're not, well, be blessed, inspired and rested anyway. And we'll meet again that week in September, the 12th and 13th. That's right, not the 13th and 14th, 12th and 13th. And we'll get back to hermeneutics and get on with the business of studying the Bible. Bless you all. Yeah.